This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Is Sky Blues Extra.
Hello and welcome to the Sky Blues Extra podcast, which is kindly sponsored by the Sky Blue Tavern. My name is Tom Ward and I'm delighted to be joined this evening by Dean.
Hi Tom, mate. How's it going?
Not too bad. Not the best of weeks ever supporting the Sky Blues, but
at least you've got a smile on your face.
just about.
Probably the only cough fan that has.
You have to laugh, really. I suppose we're used to it these days, aren't we, really? It's not a Unlike Man United fans, you know, we're actually used to hard times.
But it's like you said on Twitter the other day, like, supporting a normal club would be boring, wouldn't it?
It would be pretty boring.
Super boring.
Yeah.
We love the drama, don't we?
Yeah, just, you know, imagine just sitting there waiting for the game on Saturday, no drama.
Nah.
No one arguing on Twitter.
I live for this.
it'd be strange. We'll also be joined by Ross at some point as well. And we'll be looking back at the defeat in the week to Bristol. Also the Millwall game at the weekend. We'll try and look ahead to the Huddersfield game, although we're not holding out too much hope of that going ahead. So I imagine we'll probably turn into more of a conversation around obviously the current situation with the pitch and I guess give our thoughts really. I know haven't really had a sort of pod properly since before all of this came out. So it'd be good to kind of give our thoughts on the situation. So Dean, let's go back into Wednesday. We won't sort of dwell on it for too long, but I suppose if you want to look for some positives out of the situation, obviously debuts handed to Casey Palmer and also Fabio Tavares as well.
And also people chalking up another ground visited for
another home ground.
Yeah, that's five home grounds I count in my lifetime.
It's got to be a record, hasn't it? There can't be any other club who's done that.
No, I was trying to work it out the other day. I think Brighton maybe went to three, but that was due to stadiums being built, etc. But
Wimbledon,
yeah, maybe.
Who knows? It's a question for Jim Brown, isn't it?
Yeah. All you stat fans out there, someone work it out and let us know. But yeah, in regards to the team, talk about the debuts, but it was just a kind of one to forget for everybody, really. Mm. Like, it's not going to be one that we should look back on with any fondness anyway, but it doesn't dictate what's going to happen this year, that game. We know how Mark Robbins approaches cup games, especially the Carabao Cup. We lost to Northampton last year. If you look through the years, we've lost to some absolute ropey teams over the years. So I don't take too much out of what happened on Wednesday night. And it's difficult. When you change a whole team, it's always going to be difficult for debutants to get a foothold in that game, because there's no cohesion anyway, natural cohesion between the players and the team. And when you have a debutant, you're looking for him to sort of implement into a pretty much a full starting, not start 11 because he wouldn't be played otherwise, but a starting team, at least a solid foundation to that team. So I don't take too much out of Wednesday for them.
Yeah, I was going to say on that point, because yeah, people obviously, it really raised the question around squad depth, didn't it? That's where that came from and kicked off that conversation. And like you say, when you've got a completely different 11, it's a little bit harsh to say that, because there are 11 players that will fill in where needed in the right positions, but aren't ever really going to play. You know, hopefully we're not going to have a situation where we have to play that entire 11 in the league, because that's not always the point of your second string, is it?
It's not the point of having a squad. Your squad is there to one or two players to come in, like I just said, into the foundation that's already there. Now, look at the players who wasn't used in that Millwall game off the bench. And that tells you everything. Sorry, not the Millwall game, the Bristol game. That tells you everything you need to know in the thinking. Hamer, Jokeres, Moore, Godden, Sheaf. Hyam was out of the squad completely. O'Hare's injured. Seven players there that walk into the team, along with, you know, people that were playing anyway, like Fads and Dabo. So it's a massive overreaction for everybody. You know, these players are going to fit into the original foundation of the team. They're not going to play all 11 at once in a league game. So, yeah, I think the whole thing's just been blown way out of proportion in regards to the squad.
Yeah,
massively.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously various issues going on, but you know, like the O'Hare thing, for example, is just what happens. You're going to get injuries throughout the season, aren't you? It's unlucky timing. Obviously, Hamer being out now for one or two games, I'm not sure exactly what that's going to be.
But 11 players don't come in for those players, do they? It's just one player comes in, or two, or three at max.
Shouldn't affect the way we play in the whole.
Not at all. And you might have to make some slight adjustments, but we're not changing the whole team, so. Yeah, I just forget about Wednesday night, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it was poor. Obviously, 3-0 down after half an hour.
Yeah.
Some really poor defending, some really poor goalkeeping from Ben Wilson as well, wasn't it?
That second goal, like the ball is going in the middle of the box and he's off towards the corner flag. Like, what are you doing?
Anything to do with it being his 30th birthday the day before?
Maybe. A few Jaeger bombs on the coach on the way as well, maybe.
You know.
But yeah, awful. I mean, they're all sloppy goals. They could all be avoided. And you know, it's probably down to a lack of cohesion and communication between players that don't normally play together. You know, Callum Doyle was thrown in. A lot to ask for an 18-year-old to, you know, be chucked in at, you know, a decent level. Bristol brought, you know, a decent team to that game. They were taking it seriously. So yeah, it was just an off night. And you know, the situation regarding travelling to Burton and, you know, not playing at home, that doesn't help. It goes into the players' minds. Of course it does. So,
yeah,
it was just a bit of a sorry night, really.
Yeah, 100%. I guess one of the only things, you know, positives you can take out of it was the finish from Jamie Allen. Probably the best thing that happened all game. A really good finish from him.
Yeah, I think Jamie Allen had a decent game overall. You know, you're not going to... A lot of people talk about we had no control in the middle part, but you're not going to get that with Allen and Eccles.
Yeah.
You know, they're not really the controlling type like a Hamer, like a Sheaf, like a Liam Kelly. They're not that type of player. So I think we were always going to get overrunning midfield. But when we did have possession, I thought Allen used it intelligently during the night. And you know, to be honest, I thought Palmer had a decent game. And Adaramola as well, for me. I thought, you know, he shone quite a lot during the evening. It was, again, difficult for him to get a foothold in a team that's already 3-0 down after 30 minutes or so. So, yeah, positives. And the Jamie Allen finish, you know, that's one thing we've said over the years. He needs to show that a bit more. Show that finishing capabilities that we know he has, but he just doesn't show it enough.
Yeah, for sure. Does that midfield worry you slightly for our next game, whenever that will be? Because obviously, like you say, with Hamer out, you know, there aren't loads of options, are there, to come into the midfield?
I am a little concerned. I think we've seen Allen and Sheaf play together before and it has worked. It might mean that we play one up front and drop another in midfield at Palmer, for instance, and just try and shore that up in the middle of the park a little bit more, get a little bit more control. Obviously, that will affect the top end of the pitch. But, you know, if that's how we have to approach it, then then that's what we'll do.
Yeah. Obviously, a poor night, as you said. Were there any standout performances at all for you, if you had to sort of pick a man of the match?
Probably Adaramola, to be honest. I just thought he just looked the best of a really, really sorry bunch, if I'm honest. As I said, I don't want to keep repeating myself. It was a difficult game for him to come into, but he showed glimpses. And that's, for me, that's all he needed to do. And that's enough to get me excited for the rest of the season with him at left wing back.
Can you see him breaking in soon?
I think so. I think it'll be sooner rather than later for him. Although Bidwell had a really good game against Millwall, so maybe he took the criticism from the podcast to heart that me and Ross absolutely laid into him. Maybe took it on board and, you know, performed really, really well. So it's going to be difficult for Adam Amola to break him, but I think going forward, he's just got that little bit more quality, which we're going to need.
Yeah, for sure. We'll move on anyway swiftly from that defeat and talk about Saturday away at Millwall. Obviously, in terms of the lineups, it was pretty similar to Sunderland, but obviously we had Dabo coming in for Eccles. Is this about what you expected?
Yeah, and obviously rung the changes as expected, because that team was not our first 11 against Bristol. But yeah, I thought the team was solid, had, you know, really good spine, and they played well against Sunderland. I mean, we can't forget that. A bad mistake by Moore, of which we'll go into again in this game, but you can't really change that team. I thought they did enough against Sunderland to warrant a starting again, apart from Eccles for Dabo.
Yeah, just about what we thought it would be.
Plus, also, away from home, if I can just add, away from home, I'd rather have Jake Bidwell playing away from home, just because you're going to be on the back foot at some point. And I think defensively, he's a little bit better than maybe what we haven't seen Adam Amola in action defensively that much, but from what we gather, he's a better defensive-minded player.
Bidwell will be playing every week then.
Wow, yeah. Every game is an away game. Yeah.
We only play away.
Yeah.
It gets a bit expensive, but...
It does. Well, but look at all the home games we're going to have at the end of the season.
True. Yeah, we could have 10 in a row for the running.
So that could be a good thing. We're doing a Rotherham.
Wow, who knows? Who knows? But we'll be playing them every, like, two days at this rate.
Yeah. Then we will need the squad.
Exactly. But what was really pleasing was we started the game really well, really, mm-hmm. really well. Obviously Vic won a corner early on. And it was Fads that got the final touch as it was glanced across from Godden. Great way to start the game, wasn't it? And get that early goal.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's what we needed. Just sort of settle us, you know, take away some of the thoughts that might have been off the pitch, that might have been embroidered in the players' minds, and that we could just focus on this game. And I think there was a perfect start. We were on the front foot from the off, and Vic was back to his best, wasn't he, really running those channels, getting in behind players, some great balls, and you could see that the intent quite early, that the ball was like, it was a 1-2 and then bang, channel. That was the way we were going to play, and it worked really, really well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we didn't sort of hold up there, we continued to dominate and made it 2 as well. Thought this was a really, really good bit of play for Bidwell. Like you say, he had a good game, and a brilliant finish, Matty Godden.
Yeah. Vic with a sublime little through ball to Bidwell as well. I don't think we can underestimate how perfect that pass was to Jake. And Jake with a fantastic cross.
I mean, it's a delivery we've wanted for a while, isn't it? We don't see it enough.
Yeah, and it's undefendable, Tom.
Yeah.
It's very hard to defend that, especially when like players are running on towards the goal. Great ball, great finish. And the celebration, was it the plough? I don't know. Was it a new type of wheelbarrow? I don't really understand what was going on.
Don't know what it was. It's a new one in the locker, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Talking of new ones in the locker, I think Ross is making his way into the podcast.
Hello, chaps.
Evening, Ross. How are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you doing?
We're all good.
You got away with not talking about Bristol, mate.
Oh, did I? It's probably a good thing, you know. I'm done with the Carabao Cup, shall we say.
Oh, we're all done with the Carabao Cup because we're out. You've got probably had a scroll of notes, haven't you?
Oh, what, for Bristol City?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, where do we start? It was just a disaster, wasn't it? So
I don't want to go back, if I'm honest.
No. We've moved on. Yeah, good.
We're trying to suss out what celebration Godden and Dabo were doing on Saturday.
Oh, I think that was...
I think it was a plough.
A plough, a wheelbarrow. The old-fashioned wheelbarrow, wasn't it? To sort of, you know, take all that sand and, you know, that they've laid on top on top of the pitch and, you know. But, yeah, no, it was good. It was a good celebration.
Yeah, maybe the lawnmower is a bit of a touchy subject. That's why they've changed it.
Probably. Well, there's no grass to mow at the moment, so
we'll need that wheelbarrow for when we bring in the rolls of grass anyway.
Exactly.
Are you going to get yourself down there and help out, Ross?
Oh yeah, mate. I'm just down the road, mate. I'll be down there. So
laying the lawn.
I'll go down and then I'll go to the Skybridge Tavern and get a curry afterwards, probably.
Nice.
Are you going to be Wardy? You meeting? We'll go.
I'd be well up for it, mate. Anything for a curry. Yeah.
I'll just come for the curry, guys. Manual labour really isn't my thing.
Curry's on Dean, I reckon.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll watch you. I'll be like the foreman, just standing there watching.
Just
you
bossing
do it
people
all.
About.
Yeah, that's more my style.
Yeah. But yeah, Ross, we were just talking about the very fast start at Millwall, getting ourselves into a 2-goal lead. It was pleasing.
Yeah. Brilliant start, and I think it was probably was a pleasant surprise. I think, you know, from I guess the mood that we'd all sort of been sort of put into, if you like, from the news beforehand. So yeah, it was a great start to the game, and yeah, to see when I checked the score and saw it was, you know, not just the score but how we were playing. It sounds like we were having so many chances and could have been more, you know. And it was I sort of wasn't surprised. I was surprised because of what had happened, you know, the announcement, you know, prior, but actually we're a good team. And I think, you know, that team we've got out, our starting 11 is very good. So, yeah, and we've done quite well at Millwall the last couple of years. I remember the watch along we did. We did well that game. Last year, we took the lead as well, obviously in a 1-0 draw. So, yeah, I wasn't surprised in that sense. And it was good for Godden to get off the mark and a good goal for Fads as well. So everything was looking so good at one point.
Yeah, it was.
What about the reaction that... You know, that you've just said we are a good team. The reaction that after this game, it's been ridiculous.
I'd made points which I think we're obviously going to talk about this pitch later on. I think I'd just put it down to that. You know,
Do you think it is dictated by the off the pitch?
I think you know, we'll touch on it later more, but I think it's just clouded. It's created, you know, you've got rose tinted spectacles. I think the whole pitch thing creates this sort of dark grey spectacles, and it's hard to then look at stuff in just the way that we want to look at it, which is 2-0 up, you know, poor mistake for the goal, and that's it. Suddenly our players are rubbish. Everything's to the extreme. Everything we've got, you know, Panzo's rubbish because, you know, now Moore's dreadful, you know, bring back Lee Burge. Everything's just to the extreme, and I think it's purely down to the stupid stuff that's going off. That's what I put it down to.
You know. See, I get it that we're incredibly tribal about the whole situation because there's this, you know, fury against Wasps and, you know, what we've gone through. We're all passionate and we're all, you know, we've got raw emotions about the whole situation. But from a football perspective, we're 2 games into a 46-game season. You know, I don't need to remind you of the turmoil that Forest went through for the first 10 games of last season. And where are they now? So, okay. Yes, we do have major issues relating to the pitch, but on the actual playing side of things, I mean, everyone just needs to kind of relax and just enjoy it because we haven't become a bad team overnight because we haven't got a pissing home pitch to play on.
No. Exactly.
I think it's the uncertainty, though, isn't it, Dean? That's the problem. Like, I'm, as you know, I tend to be quite optimistic as a Cov fan, always have been, but even now, I'm, you know, the uncertainty does eat away at you a little bit, and it's when you're not playing your home games and, you know, you want to be down the CBS and feeling it. And, you know, it would be different if we were at home, I think, and playing the games. I think it's a very, very unique situation. Like, we will go on to talk about it a bit more later on, but I think it does get into your head a bit. And like Ross says, intensifies other things, other issues.
Yeah, everyone's looking at something to blame, you know, and any sort of avenue that anyone can sort of express their frustration. You know, we know there's an overreaction. There's a proportion of fans who overreact to any defeat, you know, last season. But I think it's just highlighted. And I think people look at it and, you know, I see people on Twitter saying, oh, give me 21st. I'll take that now. It's a load of baloney. It's a load of nonsense. I have no doubt that, you know, if it can get sorted, you know, as soon as possible, which needs to be done, our team is good enough. I mean, we can't forget we've touched wood. You know, we're halfway through August and we've kept our best three players. Who in their right mind, when we did the summer podcast halfway through the summer, who really believed that would be the case? No one.
No.
You know, there's so many positives. Our defensive depth, so much better than last year. And it's just because we've not been able to get into a rhythm. That's the problem. I think now we've potentially got 2 weeks to fester on this defeat, which is the problem when we should be playing tomorrow night. And I think that's why everyone's just getting so sort of frustrated. But I think the overreaction towards the players and the club, that I understand people are frustrated, but they're not the ones we need to be directing it at, you know, because at the end of the day, in isolation, if this was last year, we'd be talking about the game. And yeah, you'd get the odd person who'd go, oh, you know, what, you know, make a sort of sweeping statement. And we'd talk about Robin's lack of subs, you know, but that would be it. There wouldn't be, there seems, it's everything's over OTT at the moment.
Because of that lack of control, we've got no control over this whole situation.
Yes, it's chaotic.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the game for a sec as well. Obviously, that lead we had didn't last for too long, did it, Ross? And unfortunately, Simon Moore came off his line again, two in a row now, and the exact same result.
Yeah, really disappointing. You know, seeing that goal back, obviously, I wasn't there at the game, but I saw, obviously, you know, Dino in the group. I was a bit behind, saw the message, and I thought, this doesn't sound good, and I checked, and then lo and behold, we conceded. And someone has sent me a clip of it, and yeah, really poor. Like, it's yeah, the one against Sunderland was bad, and again, I said it at the time, if he'd stayed on his line, he'd literally just catch it because it was a terrible header. And then this one, it's like he's decided, no matter where this ball goes, I'm running out to get it, because it's dropping on like the edge of the box. I mean, he has to come so far, and it's so disappointing. And just the nature of that goal. You know, they could have scored like a wonder goal or whatever, and I'd have still believed. But the moment that was the way we conceded, I just thought, I know exactly what's going to happen here. Do you know what I mean? The script's written that we're going to throw this away, because it's almost the, of course, it's the goal that the type of goal we have to concede with everything going on. This, like, where we never get these goals. How many times did I say it last year? We never get these gift wrap goals. We never score a goal when we go.
For it, don't we?
We have to work hard for it. And yeah, we've got a goalie charging out 18 yards, gets nowhere near it. They do another rubbish header, which he'd be able to literally have a cup of tea and catch with one hand. And it goes in because he's not in the goal. It's so frustrating. So frustrating.
It looked like he'd been like watching way too much of the Commonwealth Games volleyball and just come out and started to absolutely dive for something.
It was so far out though, wasn't it?
Yeah, like it was nearly our halfway line, Tom. He was going for an adventure. I love that meme. But yeah, like I think it might be down to a little bit that there was confidence just oozing through the team. And I think Moore was just raging to get involved because he hadn't been tested at any point during that first period. And I think he wanted to show his dominance, and he's just a rush of blood to the head.
Yeah, he's got to
absolutely
be a bit smart
stupid.
That, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I'll be honest, he's cost us two games with those mistakes, because it changes the flow of the game massively. They think they've got a way back into the game, and they did through, you know, our own error. Not something that they've done really well.
Yeah.
They've been gifted it, and they've got back into the game, and they just pushed on and on from that point. And yeah, like Ross said, you knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, it's the classic, isn't it? Like 2-0 is a dangerous scoreline, and when they get one back, especially when you're in the away team, especially somewhere like Millwall as well, it's probably the worst thing that can happen before half-time, is the score to be 2-1 and them to be on the charge back. We did have a bit of a spell towards the end of the half, but obviously went in 2-1 behind. You'd probably say we deserve to go in ahead, Dean, you know, on the balance of the play. I thought we had a really good first half.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's just a shame we haven't asserted more dominance and, you know, taken the chances that we created, because there was a couple of maybe half chances that could have, you know, turned into full chances. And that was the frustrating part. And I think Millwall are going in at 2-1 going, my God, how are we still in this game? Mm. And that, like you just said, it changed. That's a dangerous scoreline to go in at half time. And the crowd were lifted by that goal. It got a little bit aggro, and, you know, we knew what was going to happen second half, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We started the second half well, though, I thought, Ross. Gok had a couple of shots stopped. Obviously, it was Millwall who got that crucial goal. We knew that next goal would be really, really important. Having watched this one back, this one's just really, really disappointing. Just their player sort of getting through two of our players. I couldn't figure out. I think it was Allen and Higham. It was definitely Allen. I couldn't figure out who the other one. I think it was Higham.
Yeah, they both leaned in either side, didn't they?
Yeah.
And he just skipped through the middle.
Yeah, skips through. And to be fair, really good shot. Obviously comes off the post, but the defence was just static. Bidwell was absolutely static, and it's just so easy for their player to get in and score. Frustrating, very frustrating.
Yeah, incredibly frustrating, and but just so predictable. And again, another goal and a type of goal that you just don't see us score. You know, like we have a shot, hits the post, and it's, you know, the defender's there first, clears it, and that's the rest is history sort of thing. So it's just so frustrating quite early on in the second half as well. You know, and at that point you're thinking, you know, it was only going to go one way sort of thing. But we did actually sort of offensively, I thought we actually caused problems, you know, when we were playing well. But I don't know, when you shoot yourself in the foot in the first half, and then you have, you know, you could argue, you know, poor defender, but also a bit of bad luck in terms of, you know, it hits the post, it could go post and out or wherever, and it happens to fall straight back to a middle player. But that just compounds the mistake from the first half, you know, because at that point it should be 2-0. We're talking about, you know, 100% we deserve to go in at halftime ahead. But you sort of feel like you almost feel a bit deflated that you're only winning 2-1, you know, when we should have been 2-0 up. And then I think that changes your mindset, because at 2-0, Millwall had it all to do. And instead, 2-1, we're sort of a bit nervous. Do we push, get that third? And then suddenly you're 2-2. And then you're just thinking, well, where do we go from here? You know, and the momentum just has completely swung, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Though we did have a good spell after their goal. We really put them under. There was that Fadzet effort that got tipped over the bar. Panzo header also hit the bar. We had a handball shout within all of that as well, Dean. So we did sort of have a go after that and had probably our best spell of the game, but couldn't get back ahead.
Yeah, and that's the frustrating part. Why does it take it to go to 2-2 for us to start going, let's get a grip here and start again? There's no doubt about it that we were the better team that whole game, but there was just periods of time. We went through it last year. There was like these 10-minute, 15-minute periods where we just let teams creep back into it, and we shouldn't be doing that. I think we're too good to be doing that, if I'm honest.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And we really have shot ourselves in the foot with the Hamer sending off not long after that. Second yellow card, Ross, and I mean, people around me were saying it wasn't a yellow, but for me, no. I was cynical.
Yeah, watching it.
Too many beers, if they said that, Tom. Jesus.
Yeah, well, that definitely was the case with a few people, yeah.
No, it was a yellow. Yeah, it was a yellow all day. I mean, it's yeah. I mean, I think I've not heard, you know, Robbins or anyone say otherwise. So yeah, really disappointing. Clearly, when I met him last week, you know, I told him, yeah, how much of a Viking he looked like. I thought, I didn't realize he was then going to just think, actually, yeah, I have got really big biceps, and then try and knock everybody out of the way. So, you know, it's all my fault really. But I think it's because he didn't win Hook a Duck, and he was just absolutely fuming. So took it out on the nearest Millwall player. But no, look, really disappointing. And again, that just again, yeah, we make a mistake, and then we're, you know, a bit poor defending, and then sending off. It was just almost like everything, you know.
Yeah.
It was like in the first 35 minutes, we didn't read the script of this is how today needs to go, because we've just had this really bad news. We have to have a really bad performance, and then we were great. You know, took the lead, and then suddenly it was like, oh yes, now everything needs to fall apart. So really frustrating. And again, you know, as you know, he's come out on Instagram, which I don't think he needs to do. I always think it's just a bit, you know, like, you know, he's won us games so more often than he has sort of cost us. Do you know what I mean? So I don't think he needed to come out and sort of apologize like he did.
Yeah, it's interesting that, isn't it? A few people picked up on that, sort of him doing it, and obviously Eccles did it after the Sunderland game as well. I don't know if that was just off their own backs, they've done that, or the club were telling them to. It's, you don't see it that often, do you really?
Not really. Not from, you know, not from our squad at all from the last few years. I mean, the only people I want to hear an apology from is Wasps. And that's all I want to hear.
He just can't wait. I can't wait. Tear into them.
But no, I am. Yeah, it's going to destroy them. But no, I honestly, yeah, I don't think the apologies are necessary. Look, I think the players know. We know the players are in tune with the supporters. They're more in tune with us than they've ever been. So, yeah, look, I get the gesture. It's a nice gesture. It doesn't, you know, make me think any more or any less. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
So, look, fair play to him. He'll be back. We'll miss him for a game.
Is it just one game? Because I saw...
Two yellow, it's one game.
Yeah, it's one game, yeah. Because people were saying games. I mean, I suppose they're probably saying games as in over the season, he's probably going to miss
probably
more than one. But
is it the next official game in the calendar or the next game we actually play?
True.
Because we could try and manipulate it so we get, lose him, against someone crap. But you know, there's not many crap teams. But is there a shout here that Heyman's discipline is becoming a concern?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I'd say it's even part of the reason why he's not attracted like serious interest over the summer, or his value's not higher. I don't know what you think, Ross, but
we're not talking about a young guy here as well, are we?
No.
He should be, you know, a lot wiser than he is. And the first yellow, I don't know how he gets that. That's his first tackle. Okay, it's a little bit cynical, the first yellow, but a few Millwall players got away with a few fouls in that first half. That could have been a yellow too. So if you're giving Gus one, they've got to be given one. But the second yellow is just stupidity. Absolutely mindless stupidity. And I can count 15 times over the period of he's been with us, maybe, that he's the stupid stuff has cost him yellow cards and red cards. And that's, I'm just sick of it, if I'm honest. I'm absolutely sick of it.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I agree. I think, you know, obviously clearly Mark Robbins was frustrated. You know, he was frustrated. And it, you know, it does cost us in terms of, you know, because he's one of our best players. We want him on the pitch. And obviously when he's mounting up these yellow cards, he missed a fair few games last year through it. The thing I always think is when I see teams against us and they're midfielders and they do cynical fouls, they're never like obviously cynical.
Yeah, they're clever though.
They're disguised cynical and they rotate it. So they never seem to get booked for ages and they've always stopped our attacks. With Hamer, it's like, okay, so you know he's going to get a yellow card, but it's like his first tackle, it's almost like so obvious. Do you know what I mean? It's not done in a clever way. So then it's so obvious that the ref has no choice.
But does he think like he's going to get away with that? Is that his mindset? He thinks he's like, if I do a stupid tackle that, you know, everyone sees as a stupid tackle and it's my first one, am I going to get away with it? It just needs to be a bit more streetwise.
There's got to be more streetwise. I think as a midfield and as a squad, you know, because you don't see many of our other players really, do you know what I mean, consistently getting that amount of yellow cards. There needs to be some sort of, there needs to be better awareness. You know, when he's on a yellow card, he needs to think, I can't do this sort of thing.
It's where he's done it on the pitch as well. I mean, we'd have had so much time. I mean, yeah, they were on the break, but we didn't have every player forward, did we? We would have had plenty of cover and we were quick enough as well. I mean, it wasn't like he was throwing goal, was it?
No.
He was in his own, he was in their own half.
Yeah, we had three men covering. Yeah. And he was on, the ball was going towards the side of the pitch. It was a good chance it was probably going out of play.
You've got to let the play go on at that point and see what happens, because it's more likely to not end up in a goal than be a goal, isn't it? In that position.
But also, you know, ask yourself the question. Let's say they did break and score, but he doesn't make the foul. You know, I'm more confident that we might be able to get back in the game with 11 men than if we're 2-2 and then suddenly gone down to 10 men. Like it's like you say, the position on the pitch. And it did make me laugh though. Like, you know, he knows it's yellow when he like rolled around on the floor as well. Do you know what I mean? Like that sort of disguised thing of like, oh, I think I made a mistake here. Do you know
Has
what I mean?
Any player ever got away with that?
Castanier definitely did get away with that against Portsmouth when he rolled around on the floor in his face. And then But yeah, look, the discipline does need to be sorted out because he's already going to be suspended for his first game. And we've only played two games. Obviously midfield, we're a bit light, I think, in terms of quality and depth. So it'll be interesting to see what we do.
Yeah. They obviously got their winner, a ball into the box, which we didn't deal with particularly well. I thought Saville did pretty well to get his shot away. But again, we just sort of weren't really quick enough to the danger, were we at all, Dean?
The pattern of the sea, Tom, to be honest. Panzo doesn't come out. To be fair, people were moaning about Bidwell's header. I think he makes a really good header, and it's then for the second player to come and, you know, clear up the situation. But Panzo doesn't come to the ball quick enough, and you can see when they score, Fads is shouting, "Guys, you've got to push out. You've got to get there quicker." And that was, it was just frustrating. But it was coming. You could just feel the anticipation in that ground that they were going to score at some point. And when they got an opportunity, they took it. And yeah, very, very frustrating.
And Ross, the topic you've probably been waiting to talk about, the subs or the lack of subs. Obviously, we waited till the 88th minute to make any changes. What did you make of that?
So obviously, because of the work I was doing at different times, I missed certain chunks of the game. So it was only really after that when I sort of sat down and saw everything, you know, in terms of chronological events, etc., that I realised that we'd got a man sent off and gone behind before a substitute was made. Now, me, I remember us three, and I did podcasts with you, Wardy and Dino, we spoke last year, especially around the back end, about these subs, you know. And I love Mark Robbins. He's, you know, the king. But the subs, and then what he says after the game, just never like matches up to me. Like, I would be, you know, so we've not played in, we didn't play that extra game. Obviously, you know, most of the first team, seven players didn't play against Bristol. So they'd had like a 2-week gap. Now, flip it. If that was us playing a team who'd had a 2-week gap, the reason would be, well, they're going to be sharper because they're, you know, they've played, you know, less game. And then he obviously was very hot. And then he sort of says, we're getting tired. But we've got five subs, you know, and it's like, if we're tired, why not change it? And Hamer's on the yellow card. Now, I agree that we can't always have to take Hamer off when he's on a yellow. He needs to have some self-discipline. Otherwise, if that's just a prerequisite that Hamer gets a yellow, we have to sub in, then that does, you know, cost us a bit in terms of other changes. But the fact that we have five that we can make, we had made zero, you sort of go, well, why not take him off anyway? It's not like we were making other subs. And then we go behind, and then it's just, it's always reactive. And I remember, Dino, you said this last year, it's never like, I don't get why we're not proactive in things. Like, you know, like you say, the momentum was going one way and one way only. Why don't we try and wrestle that back with changes? I thought these signings this year were a smaller squad with more depth. And we've got players there. Casey Palmer, just not brought on, you know, like, and it sort of, I end up scratching my head. And then when I hear that the players are getting tired towards the end, I just think, well, we've got subs there to make. So then why our journalists don't ask the question of why you don't make, why no subs were made? Like, you know, we were speculating, weren't we, in our group chat of, is it because he doesn't rate the people on the bench, or what did he think? You know, what he clearly was more concerned about making subs than keeping the status quo. I don't know what you think. It's frustrating, though.
And it was 30 degrees. The players had run through a brick wall. We were without Hamer from the 67th minute or something like that. You know, it's tiring. You're chasing around that pitch once you're down to 10 men. And he decided not to have Waghorn and Michael Rose, two of his most experienced players, not on the bench. So it's just beggar's belief, to be honest. I don't understand it at all, especially with the heat and the way the game had panned out. It was just such an odd and peculiar thing not to make at least one sub before we went 3-2 down.
I just feel like we were playing quite well, and he trusted, like, I think it's kind of what you were saying, Ross. Like, I feel like he trusted the players on the pitch, and even like Vic looked absolutely shattered. Like, he was visibly so tired, but even then he was so effective. He was making such, like, he was doing so many good things. And you thought, a tired Vic is actually better than, well, I don't know who you'd have brought on in place of him.
But I also think when Vic was making those chances, we had little amount of players in and around the box for support for him.
Yeah.
So at that point you go, okay, well, it's potentially not working. Let's try and get out of here with a draw, and then utilize the subs effectively to try and, you know, manage that game to a 2-2. You just sometimes you just got to, you know, say that's it. We're not going to get a really golden opportunity here. Let's just take what we've got.
Yeah, take it. I remember what you said to me before the game. You know, take a point, and like I say, you know, a win would have been great for everyone's mood, and I'd have took a point as well. I think that the thing that sort of startles me a little bit is, and I know it's really early, so Allen to me is the closest midfielder we've got to Hamer in terms of, you know, that energy to get around the pitch. So Allen's obviously, again, we're starting as Cam. So Hamer's on the other card. You're thinking, well, the logical thing would be then to move Allen back into centre mid and bring on an out-and-out Cam and Casey Palmer. But that doesn't happen. So then I'm here going, well, he's had the same preseason as everybody else. You know, players go away on holiday, they let themselves go a bit, then they come back to train. But then we're told that it's going to be months. He's got to catch up months. And I don't know, I saw Casey Palmer against Wharton preseason. I saw some really exciting things and I want him to be really good. I want him to play. Otherwise, I just think, you know, this guy's not cheap. Like, what are we doing? You know, I find it, that baffles me sort of. Because I'm just thinking, you know, sign this guy, 3-year deal. And I know we've only played two games, but, you know, it was like, I don't know what you think to it. It just, the problem is we've got square pegs, round holes. So we're playing Allen out of position and he's a central midfield option. He doesn't want to bring on our actual Cam. So then that restricts us even further. I don't get it.
Well, it's square pegs, round holes with this formation.
Well,
just
yeah.
Change it.
Well, true. Yeah, true.
Just change it and utilize the squad that you have at your disposal to the best. And that if that's with a flat back four, then we do that and get more control in the middle of the park. It's just, we changed the system against Sunderland to counter them. Why didn't we do it in this game?
But all those players, I agree, and it worked against Sunderland. But if you actually look at the personnel, they are all out playing out of position. Tavares on the right wing, Vic on the left. I mean, we'd have been better off keeping someone like Jody Jones to have that plan B on the wing, who's an actual winger. Do you know what I mean? We've got all these defensive options now, like loads, and I feel like we could play a four or a five easy. And then you get to the top end, or a six or a seven. You get to the top end of the pitch, and we've got all these people who just want to be in the middle. You know, no actual, you know, Tavares did well against Sunderland on the right, and I think he can play. Then Vic's very good cutting in from the left, but I don't know. It sort of baffles me a bit. I don't know what. And the Palmer thing, it's frustrating because I just want him to play. I think, how is he going to get any more match sharp if he's not playing?
I think that was a great game for him to come into, to be honest. Mm. Even like at 60 minutes before Hamer had been before Hamer had been sent off, I'd have took Hamer off, dropped Allen back and put Palmer in.
Well, he needs to have a chance, doesn't he? Like, if he plays and he's well off it, then fair enough. Robbins is right. But like Ross says, how is he going to get there if he's not playing? He's not just suddenly going to be match fit, is he?
He showed glimpses in pre-season. He showed glimpses against Bristol City and we lost the game 4-1. What? You know, he's got to be given an opportunity.
And why is he on the bench then? Do you know what I mean? I don't want people making up the numbers. If he's well off the pace, you know, like...
Then why is he here?
Why is he even... Yeah, why is he there? You know, and this is not us or me, like, writing him off. I think there's a real player in there.
Yeah, 100%.
It's just, I find it, I want him to play. It's a frustration of, we've got a second choice Cam, O'Hare's injured. So we've got another Cam option. Why isn't he not playing? I find that's, the, I don't get it. Like I say, I saw glimpses. And even if it's half an hour, you know, like you say, 30 degree heat, bring him on half an hour, go out there, quality on the ball, try and thread a good pass in or whatever it might be. And it just feels like I get what you're saying, Wardy. Like when we're playing well, I think Robbins will often stick rather than twist. If we're playing like a 7.5 out of 10, often he's more worried about it going wrong and going bust than actually hitting that 21, you know, and hitting that blackjack and actually making the difference. So often we won't make these subs. And lo and behold, we got more and more tired. We got a man sent off. And then, yeah, they make changes, freshen things up, fresh impetus, and we lose the game.
Hell of a rant there.
Yeah. Not much to say back to that, really.
Clip that up. It's probably the whole episode.
Yeah, no, it's disappointing when you're 2-0 up and you lose 3-2. It's always disappointing. Ross, there were some good performances from the Sky Blues. Who was your pick?
So after he listened to our podcast following the Sunderland game, Jake Bidwell, man of the match. I think, you know, as Dean put, Jake Bidwell woke up feeling dangerous. And and I think, no, he was very good. Great ball in. That's two assists in two games now, including obviously the one against Bristol. I like the position, the run, you know, like we said, sometimes he'll make the right run, won't receive the ball. This time he did. Great ball in. So that's great to start getting these assists. That's what we want from our wingbacks. Defensively, good as well. So, yeah, Jake Bidwell, I think, was the best player for us.
Dean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think 37 touches in the opposition half for Jake Bidwell tells you everything you need to know. And he needs to perform that level going forward offensively. Yeah. If he wants to stay in the team, he's got pressure now from Adaramola, which is good. That might be the, you know, the reason why he's gonna, his performances are going to go up and up. So I think he had a really good game. Sheaf had a good game too. I thought he had a real good control of the midfield. And just to pick up, Matty Godden and Carl McFadden made the team of the week as well in a losing team, which is which is good.
And Vic, and it just goes showing Vic doesn't even get a mention because I thought he was brilliant again.
Yeah.
And you had Millwall fans on Twitter saying, I don't usually praise opposition because they don't, because they're Millwall, but and saying how good he was. So, you know, it just goes show we lost the game, but there were a lot of really good performances in the team.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
We'll move on now anyway and talk about the ongoing pitch debacle.
Look at Ross's hopefully little face light up there. Look, his hands, he's rubbing his hands.
Yeah. Obviously, we're recording this on Monday. So, you know, as people listen throughout the week, God knows what will have happened or come out since. But Ross, what are your thoughts at the very moment on the situation?
Well, very much the same as everybody else in terms of one of just sheer sort of frustration, anger, but also sort of just like sadness. I just think the whole thing is just sad, you know. Like, I was thinking about this today, actually, and I feel actually a bit better having spoke about the Millwall game or focusing on football, because even after the game, I just feel so deflated with it all, like to the point where I wasn't actually that bothered. Do you know what I mean? Like, some people have gone the other way to the extreme and sort of, you know, overly critical of on the pitch stuff. I just felt a bit sort of numb to it because we fought for years and years and years to try and get back to the stadium, right? And we had these legal rows and it looked like, you know, these two organizations, which we just thought, just get your heads together and sort it out. Looked like it was never going to happen. And then they did. And then we signed a 10-year thing. And then last year was brilliant. We loved it. This season is the most excited I've been for a Coventry season in my lifetime. Record season ticket sales, unbelievable kits, keeping in touch with our best players, you know, putting our money where our mouth is in terms of rejecting bids, showing actually we mean business, adding players in, good promising young players, etc. Good, great opening tie against Sunderland away. Loads of things to be positive about. And then suddenly we're just sort of absolutely shafted. And we've got a 10-year deal to play at the stadium. And I think this is in a way worse than what's happened in the past, because we can play at the stadium. We've got a deal, but we can't play because we haven't got a pitch. And it's not even about that the pitch is, it's not safe. So, I mean, like the pitch could be absolute shambles, but it's safe. This is like the bottom of the barrel. And I've sort of gone around with it thinking, this is the worst time it could happen, because this is the most condensed season we're probably ever going to have with the World Cup. And now it's going to be even more condensed than it already is. I think the problem is, like Dino alluded to earlier, it's been a chaotic start. We can't, it's like, well, I say start, stop. It's just, we don't know if we're coming or going. We don't know what's going on. You listen to Dave Boddy's interview, it makes grim listening. You know, it feels like there's a lot of people sitting on their hands at the moment and silence. And for us as fans, it's just incredibly frustrating because we all bought season tickets or whatever. I want to go. There should be a game tomorrow night. I want to go up there and get what I'm paying for. And I know it's not the club's fault. And Wasps has absolutely done us dirty. And the problem is they've got us over a barrel. Do you know what I mean? Like, because we want to play. We've got 13,500 season tickets. You know, this is our home, the stadium, you know, that was built for us, blah, blah, blah. And we can't play there because we haven't got a pitch fit for purpose. And I've been going in my head round and round and round thinking, what is the solution? Like, how do we actually move forward? And me and Dino were talking about this on the weekend of, you know, what are the consequences? I mean, something needs to happen now. And I think ultimately, if we want to play, and you know, you've seen analogies and sort of parallels drawn in terms of if you were renting a house, blah, 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 you know, and you went away, came back, it was trashed. And of course, you wouldn't expect as the tenant to be the one to have to fix the shower or whatever's broke. But unfortunately, we've got these landlords who just neglect, really. And I don't know, I think we just need to pay for this pitch. you know, and use it in some sort of sense of negotiation with them moving forward of whatever. I mean, otherwise, I don't know what happens. I really don't know what happens, but just, I don't know. I just find it draining, you know, because I feel like I thought that was the end of everything last year. You know, 10 years, we've got 2031. We've got a home. It's not like we've got a 2-year deal and in 2 years we're going to start worrying about, are we going to have a home to play at? We have got a home to play at, but we haven't got a pitch to play on. I mean, you couldn't write it, but that's my thoughts. It's just frustrating. And it's killed a lot of my, excitement for the season. And that's not because of the Coventry City, but just everything I was feeling for it. It feels like it's just been sort of sapped away.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra podcast. That's been Ross Cooper. Good night.
Yeah, no, I get how you feel. Yeah, it's like you say, it has sapped a lot of that excitement away. It does feel like, I don't know what you feel, Dean, but like there is that time pressure now, isn't it? That every day that goes by, nothing's being done. There's no plan in place. It's not like someone said, right, on Thursday, a new pitch is being relayed and it's going to take 4 weeks. There's just no plan, and the longer it goes on, it's like, how many games are going to get called off and what's that going to mean for us? You know, it could have an impact.
Yeah, massively. We're at this kind of impasse now, and at the stage where somebody just needs to grab hold of the situation by the scruff of the neck and rectify it. If that means getting in there and laying a pitch ourselves, let's just go and bloody do it. There's just so many permutations that can happen now. Like, do we have to go ground share? But is that an option because fixtures have already been made? Personally, I can see us going to play behind closed doors somewhere as a home pitch, and like a non-league ground, a Borough, for instance, and we just play home pitches there, home matches there, behind closed doors, until the situation is rectified. I spoke to Ross of the week. I was thinking like maybe we'd ground share with Birmingham, but now thinking about the situation with the fixture list already being put in place, I don't think that's even an option anywhere that we play another Championship club or League One or League Two club. We got away with the one with Burton because things just worked out. Burton were not playing. And I think Derby were away that night, were they, or not playing in the cup? I can't really remember. So the policing situation was absolutely fine. But you're going to be looking for those things to happen and the stars to align every week if we want to go that way. And we can't do that. We can't go by a week-by-week basis. Now, I said a couple of weeks ago, let's lay the pitch, give it 6 weeks to bed in, and we'll just go play somewhere else in that 6 weeks. But we're only 10 days now behind. We're behind the eight ball in the whole situation. And like Ross said, the main issue is with the Wasps, but I personally feel like there's been errors on both sides of the fence too. And it's just very, very frustrating. We're now in this public spat, statements, counter statements, people going back on agreements. It's just, as a fan, it's just massively frustrating because like Ross said, after all the highs of the last few years, them great vibes between the club, the players, the fans, this saga is just utterly deflating.
Yeah, it should be the most exciting part of the season, shouldn't it? And it's frustrating.
And the lack of communication, Tom. What is going on? Why are they releasing a statement on the Saturday morning of a game?
Yeah, I wasn't impressed by that at all.
That's a joke. Don't tell me they didn't know that game was being postponed 2 or 3 days before. Because if the EFL's agriculture team were in there on Thursday, they would have told on Thursday evening that pitch is not suitable. They'd been going around the pitch with them on Thursday and saying, you can't play here.
Well, they did. I mean, Boddy came out and said, there was no way that there's no way that Tuesday's game was able to go ahead. So why not tell us on Thursday night?
Doesn't take 2 days to postpone and release a pissing statement.
To me, the only concerning thing with it all is, I was listening to Boddy, and I like Boddy, and he's coming for some, I think, unfair criticism. I think so much of what he's done, in this sort of Robbins era has been really good. But there does feel like you said, Dino, someone's got to take responsibility. And ultimately, look, the problem is Wasps don't have a game, right, until like mid-September their season starts. So they're in no rush, to do anything. We're the ones who need a pitch to play on. We're the ones who, and look, it is a big expense, and of course, Wash should be the ones who are bloody funding it or at least contributing. But if they're saying no to that, then unfortunately, I don't see any other option. Then we have to do, you know, take matters into our hands and lay the pitch. I mean, Boddy was saying we could do it in a week. You know, they grow it somewhere else, bring it in, and it's down. So we actually haven't got our next home game is Preston. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The 31st of August. So we've got half a month. There's time, 2.5 weeks, whatever, to sort it out.
We could have been doing that 10 days ago, Ross.
Well, we could. Yeah, of course, I mean, this is the only point that the criticism to the club would be. So we all knew the Commonwealth Games were happening. The club did. Why? It's almost like we waited to that Saturday, you know, of the Rotherham game and then went, oh, crap, look at the state of it. Like,
well, to be fair, though, the Commonwealth Games have only just given the keys back to the stadium.
Right.
Yeah.
This week.
And the other big factor is that the club weren't worried because they thought the pitch was going to be relayed, which didn't happen.
Yeah.
That's the other big factor.
But even so, when was that due to be relayed? Because if it was going after that last Rugby Sevens game, it still wasn't going to be in any good shape for that first game.
Boddy's interview, he was saying before, but he actually did admit that the club were informed that a new pitch wasn't going to be relayed in June. That Wasps did say to them that...
When you think about it, what were the club going to do in June? Just start kicking up a massive fuss publicly to Wasps and...
Well, you've got to put pressure on them.
Yeah.
They would have... Well, yeah, but hindsight's a wonderful thing. I'm sure they would have kicked off privately, but this could have all been... Obviously, in hindsight, it would have been better, but they probably thought, we don't want to kick up a fuss and we'll just have to hope the pitch is okay. If not, cross that bridge when we get to it.
Well, if they were told in June, why wasn't a contingency plan in place?
Yes, yeah.
But you know how difficult Wasps are to deal with.
No, but don't there's never any plan disregard in place, Wasps. If we can make a contingency plan with another club or, you know, with the EFL.
Fixtures weren't out by then?
No.
You know, in June. I mean, I guess that's the only thing I look at the club and go, so, because Dave Boddy's come out and said, you know, Wasps need to give us an action plan. And I agree. They should. Their statement was 2-3 days late. There was just silence. And they come out and instead of apologising and going, okay, look, we apologise to the fans. This is the step, but this is what we're going to do about it. Then I'd accept that. If they'd gone, look, this is what we're going to do. A new pitch is going to go down. We apologise that the Rotherham games had to be postponed, blah, blah, blah. But it'll be, you know, you'll be back in time for, you know, Wigan, whatever. Then you sort of go, okay, there's a plan. Wheels are in motion. But it feels like we're just stalled and no one's doing anything. And they're just like looking at each other, waiting to see who blinks first. Yeah. The whole thing is so frustrating. And we're the ones who suffer because I'm thinking, well, you know, what is going on? And the only frustration with the club is in June when they were told, when Dave Boddy said we were told by Wasps it wasn't going to be relayed, why at that point are we not demanding a plan of action then? You know, because Dave Boddy even said in his interview to Coventry Warwickshire that the pitch will not, even currently, if it gets safe, won't be able to be played on more than a couple of games because there's nothing underneath the grass. It would just all tear up anyway. So, yeah. So he was like, surely knowing that, we must have been going thinking, well, okay, we're in June. Fixtures aren't out yet. We've got a bit of time. What's going to happen, Wasps? What's happening? You know, and unfortunately, that's not been done.
I suppose that the club probably didn't realise, or you know, out of sheer stupidity, basically, that how bad the pitch was going to be after 66 games of rugby on there.
Yeah,
and maybe that's why they didn't make a contingency plan. But that's just utter stupidity. You've had a pitch that's been down for 18 months, and then you're going to have intense matches of rugby union. 66 games or whatever it was, back to back to back. No time for that pitch to sort itself out, even overnight, really. So, you know, it's just stupid to think that the pitch was going to be in any good shape anyway. So there should have been a contingency plan in place.
And Wasps are just, I mean, everyone get out your little done bingos. I'm done with Wasps.
I don't think it'll be too long before they're in the bin, mate, if I'm honest.
I just think, you know, and you see... You know, you read these things about, like, obviously legal action, or you hear about your body saying they've activated this, you know, dispute claims thing, which goes to a third party panel, whatever. But I'm thinking that's all good and well sort of thing. You know, I don't know the complexities of that. But what I do know is, you know, like body did seem to be aware of is, you know, time is of the essence and we need to get this pitch down. And the fact that he labeled out that literally what we would do is you get one of these pitches that's already grown and you roll it in like Tottenham did sort of thing down in a week, it's ready. Then that's clearly what we've got to do then, isn't it? Like that's clearly the solution.
They must be talking about that now and even if the club are deciding to do it themselves, then that must be the conversation. It has to be.
But you think, like, if the pitch is not fit for football, it's definitely not going to be fit for rugby. It's more intense underfoot, a game of rugby, with your scrums, etc. So the pitch ain't going to be safe for them to play rugby on in 30 days' time. No way. Right. How much sand did they say? 60 tons?
Yeah.
That's just going to be creeping underneath the grass in that time. And if there's no soil underneath, like Dave says, and it's kind of the pitch is kind of deflating in a way, then no way is that going to pass any safety checks for rugby. So they're going to be in the same situation. So what do they do? I think it just goes to show Wasps don't really have a pot to piss in. And they can't afford. They can't even afford to stump up half the cash. And then you talk about compensation and stuff. We're not going to get any compensation out of a club that's going to be in the bin in about 2 months' time. It's stupid. Those kind of things just do not help at the situation at this current time, when the only solution is that we go in and just do it ourselves. And to do that, we're going to have to get WASP agreement. So public spats, litigations, compensation claims do not help the situation one bit.
The other problem is that ultimately there are two things that need to happen. Ultimately, it's like an end game. Either we need to become the owners of the leasehold of the CBS, right? That's what my preference, I think everyone's, would be. The other thing that I've never for one second believed ever, but, you know, Sisu and that carry on toeing the line that about a new stadium. That's the other thing that, you know, they're the two options. We need to own the CBS, or we do need to build a new stadium, which I never ever think that's going to happen. Because why would we want that when, you know? But I just think I'm done with WASP. I'm done with the idea of sharing a pitch, even if we were like the landlords and they were the tenants and roles were reversed. But I don't know how we get to that point. I feel like the relationship had obviously scabbed over. It was like a graze, and it's scabbed over enough that we could agree this deal. And now someone's just like ripped this scab off again, you know, and it feels like we're back to square one. I don't know. I don't know where we go from here. I don't know how we ever obtain the ground, you know. I don't see how we ever build a new stadium. So then what are we going to be like this in, you know, when's enough enough? You know, when do we actually make progress to actually having, you know, I'm going around in circles because I don't even know like what the answer is.
Get the idea of a new stadium out of your head.
Well, no, it's not. I agree.
But even when they announced it, I got it out of my head about 10 minutes later. But like I said to you, Ross, in regards to the ground, it's pretty clear that Ross have got no money and they can't really afford to lose us. So is Sisu's plan to go in for the kill at this point and hope they crash and burn? You know, still playing with fire in a way, because the bondholders and HSBC, who are basically the financier behind WASPs, if they strike some kind of deal, then you know that might give WASP a lifeline, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're relying now on the bondholders to really put the pressure on WASPs to sell the stadium and then to give them people their money back, or at least a decent return on their money. I think that's in regards to the sort of the situation with the stadium. But that doesn't mean we automatically get hold of the stadium. We're still going to have to pay the price that it will probably fall in HSBC's hands. We're still going to have to pay the price that they require for the stadium. So are CC willing to do that? I don't know. The price might be overinflated. If the bondholders put pressure on the seller to get as much money as they can, then the price might be too much for even us to afford. Yeah. So then we're back at square one again. With nowhere to play. Because the agreement that we had in place is with the original leaseholder. It won't automatically go over to the person who takes on that lease.
I suppose you've got to be careful what you wish for, haven't you, in these situations?
We're in a mess, Tom. It's a mess. And for once, it's not of our own doing.
Mm. Yeah. What do you think, Wardy, mate? Like, in terms of how do you see it all panning out, because, you know, we signed this 10-year agreement, and like I say, I thought, happy days, the last thing I need to worry about now is the stadium we've actually got, we're playing in our city, and lo and behold, 12 months later, and we're in a mess where we can't even play in the stadium.
Yeah, I think I agree with what you've both been saying. I think it's been mismanaged on both sides. I think we've been a bit naive, perhaps, in the situation. So I went to a forum that Dave Boddy was at a few months ago, and he seemed to think, you know, he's very aware that obviously the Commonwealth Games was happening, but the pitch should be okay. It didn't feel like there was a contingency plan in place for if it wasn't going to be okay, which was always a possibility. So yeah, I just think we've been badly let down by Wasps. Really hard to see what's going to happen over the next few weeks. I think we need some kind of certainty, even if if the pitch isn't going to be right for a month or two, we just need some kind of certainty. It's going to be pretty, you know, it's going to be awful if we have to play somewhere else. But I don't know, would you take that now just to know what's going on? Because it's just it's just not great not really knowing.
100%, because the longer this goes on, the more games that gets postponed, it hampers the season.
We need to play the games.
Long term. And who knows, man? Like, the EFL hold the cards here, because if they start saying, well, it's getting to a point now, you've cancelled four or five games, you're going to have to start forfeiting some of these games, because you're not going to have, there's just no time to play them throughout the season. And it affects other clubs as well. It's not just us that it affects, it's the other clubs too. So who knows? We might have to start forfeiting games in the long run. Obviously, we don't want that to happen. And there's no, you know, there's no reason why, you know, potential points deductions could come into place at that point. We just don't know. This hasn't happened before, I don't think, for any other club. So
yeah,
there's nothing that's in the, place to the, say.
That's the thing with it, isn't it? Like, a lot of our issues, it's always a very unique situation. Oh. There's no, like, you know, there's no way that a formula of how it goes.
No. We're heads in the sand a little bit to what the EFL could potentially throw us. There's no doubt about it. We're going to get fined. 100%. Yeah. We'll get fined for the situation we're in, for not playing games when they've been allocated. So long term, I'll worry. And that's the reason why I say, look, can we get an agreement in a club that we could just play behind closed doors for the time being? I know it's a sorry situation, but it might be the only way to get the games done.
Revenue's a big problem though, isn't it?
It is, but you know, that's the nature of the beast when we don't own our own stadium. We have no control.
But that's why I think surely 500,000 or 400,000 to 500,000, what Boddy said, for a new pitch is worth it than having 10 of the 13,500 season ticket holders wanting refunds because they're not going to go and all that. Surely paying for this new pitch is a cost worth paying for us on the pitch, because I think the sooner we can get back to normal, the sooner we can actually, you know, have a good season and enjoy it. But also for us, the fans. So your Boddy was very clear, and I thought he came across well when he said, you know, he feels so sorry for the fans. But I think, like I say, if you weigh it up, paying for whoever, what venue we're going to have to play at, let's say St. Andrews, just as an example, loss of revenue from people wanting refunds, surely it's cheaper to, you know, for this $500,000. For a
totally
new pitch.
Agree, 100%. But then we're down to Wasps agreeing for us to do that.
Well, I can't see why they would say no if we said we'd pay for the whole thing. I can't. I mean, I'd be astounded. I mean, that's what they'll happily take that and then butcher it up for the world, you know, in the World Cup. But that's the only way I see it going forward, is we just need to go look, and maybe we use it as a thing of, listen, moving forward, this, you know, we'll pay for this pitch now, but next summer. Do you know what I mean? And use it as some sort
there
of...
There won't be a next summer for Wasps, Ross. They can't even afford a new kit, mate.
Even more reason.
Even more, yeah, exactly then. Even more reason to then just do it then.
That's why the rumours are saying Arsisu going in for the kill here. Just remove their revenue stream by us not being there. So, you know, is that the tactic? There's so many perpetrations, aren't there, about things going on. It's just... you know what? I just feel sorry for the fans, man. Like, yeah, we don't know the situation. We haven't seen the state of the pitch in the last 5-6 days. So what progress has been made on the pitch at the moment? Have they just stopped doing it because the EFL said last Thursday, there's no way this pitch is going to be in any fit state at any point. So do we just stop, you know, trying to fix it? It's just, oh, I'm done. There you go. I don't think you'd get a done out of me this early in the season, but I'm going for a Ross special.
Yeah, well, hopefully you feel like you got that off your chest a little bit and aired some of our thoughts around the pitch. But fingers crossed, things will get resolved soon, and we can just carry on talking about the games, because obviously that's the part we enjoy when it comes to the Sky Blues. But yeah, cheers for joining me, chaps. That's all we've got time for this evening. And listeners, do have a look at what's happening down at the Sky Blue Tavern this week. They've got live sport on every night, and they are having the beer and curry deal for $9.99 as well. So do get down there and check that out. Get your booths and tables booked. Obviously, good to support them whilst the Sky Blues aren't, you know, having home games every week. And as always, if you want to get involved in anything we've talked about this evening, then you can on Twitter, and you can use the hashtag SBE Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra Podcast.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.